Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadada Sri Vasadi Sri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sama Veda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premanande All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gaudama. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 6, the conversation between Narad and Vyasadeva, this morning's text number 27. Evam Krishna Mate Brahman Na Asaktasya Kamala Atmanaha Kalaha Radhurabhut Kale Tadit Saudamani Yata Evam Krishna Mater Brahman Nasaktasya Malatmanaha কালপ্রাদুর্ভবৎকালে সৌদামনীয়ত এবং কৃষ্ণমতির্ব্রহন নাশক্তশ্যামলাত্মনঃ কালপ্রাদুর্ভবৎকালে সৌদামনীয়ত এবং কৃষ্ণমতির্ব্রহ্মণ নাশক্তশ্যামলাত্মনঃ কালপ্রাদুর্ভবৎকালে তদিৎসৌদামনীয়ত শ্যামলাত্মনঃ কালপ্রাদুর্ভবৎকালে এবং কৃষ্ণমতে ব্রাহ্মণ নাশক্তশ্যামলাত্মনঃ কালপ্রাদুর্ভবৎকালে শ্যামলাত্মনঃ শ্যামলাত্মনঃ কালপ্রাদুর্ভবৎকালে তদিৎসৌদামনীয়ত এবং কৃষ্ণমতির্ব্রহ্মণ নাশক্তশ্যামলাত্মনঃ কালপ্রাদুর্ভবৎকালে তদিৎসৌদামনীয়ত এবং কৃষ্ণমতে ব্রহ্মণ নাশক্তশ্যামলাত্মনঃ কালপ্রাদুর্ভবৎকালে তদিৎসৌদামনীয়ত এবং কৃষ্ণমতে ব্রহ্মণ নাশক্তশ্যামলাত্মনঃ কালপ্রাদুর্ভবৎকালে তদিৎসৌদামনীয়ত এবং thus Krishnamate, one who is fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Brahman, O Vyasadev, not Asaktasya, of one who is attached. Amala Atmanaha, of one who is completely free from all material dirt. Kalaha, death, Pradurabhut, become visible.
Become visible.
Kale.
Kale.
In the course of time.
In the course of time.
Tardit. Lightning.
Lightning.
Saudamani.
Saudamani.
Illuminating.
Illuminating.
Yata.
As it is.
Translation. And so, O Brahmana Vyasadeva, in due course of time, I, who was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna, and who therefore had no attachments, being completely freed from all material taints, met with death, as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. Srila Prabhupada's report. To be fully absorbed in the thought of Krishna means clearance of material dirts or hankerings. As a very rich man has no hankerings for small petty things, so also a devotee of Lord Krishna who is guaranteed to pass on to the kingdom of God, where life is eternal, fully cognizant and blissful, naturally has no hankerings for petty material things which are like dolls or shadows of the reality and are without permanent value. That is the sign of a spiritually enriched person. And in due course of time, when a pure devotee is completely prepared, all of a sudden the change of body occurs, which is commonly called death. And for a pure devotee, such a change takes place exactly like lightning. An illumination follows simultaneously. That is to say, a devotee simultaneously changes his material body and develops a spiritual body by the will of the Supreme. Even before death, a pure devotee has no material affection due to his body being spiritualized like a red-hot iron in contact with fire. So again, I'll read the translation. And so, O Brahmana Vyasadeva, in due course of time, I, who was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna and who therefore had no attachments, being completely freed from all material taints, met with death as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. So, here he's describing himself, what happened. So Narada Muni, Krishna Mate, he was fully absorbed in the thought of Krishna. So the consequence is Nasaktasya and Amala Atmanaha. There is no material attachment and free from all material dirt. So Prabhupada explains this very clearly. He gives the example. A rich man has no hankering after petty things. Somebody in the depths of poverty, we will see them. At the New York Rath Yatra, for example, I saw people at the edge of Central Park going around with plastic bags, picking up discarded, aluminum cans. And they were very alert to pick up these discarded aluminum cans. Then we went to visit one of our congregational members who was staying in the Trump Plaza, a rich person. And you'll never find him, Bhakti Henry, scrounging Central Park for aluminum cans. He has no attraction for aluminum cans. So in the same way, A person, Prabhupada uses the word spiritually enriched, so that's a kind of wealth. Has no attraction for petty material things. He loses his attraction, he says in Bhagavad Gita, for pale things. Because this Krishna Mate means actually to live within the kingdom of God. And the effect of Krishna Mate, the effect of the revelation of Krishna through Krishna's name, because the chanting of Hare Krishna is a process of gradual revelation. First Krishna's name, realization of the name, then of the form, then of the qualities, then of the pastimes. This is a sequence given to us by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One after another, these things unfold to the spiritual vision of a devotee. Prabhupada says that a pure devotee has a kind of spiritual television. And in his heart, the pastimes of Krishna are constantly being broadcast. Now, when the spiritual quality is there of Sat, Chit, Ananda, these are immediately apprehendable qualities if one, by the spiritual senses or the spiritualized senses. The perception of spiritual reality is, oh, this is Sat. That means it has no beginning and it has no end. It's more real. Then in comparison, the things of the material world, which have a beginning and an end, they're insubstantial. They hardly exist at all. They're gone practically before they exist, come into being. It's just like that. Just like fast flickering images. And of course, you know, from the higher planets, where there's an increase of the quality of sattva, when Brahma looks down at the Earth planet, it's like seeing the whole thing on fast forward. Dynasties rise and fall, you know, come and go, kingdoms come and it's all just a flux. So it has no quality of reality. So when one actually experiences the reality of Krishna, immediately one, this is real, this is true, this is satisfying. Sat, Chit, and Ananda. So if one is in touch with those things that have the quality of Sat, Chit, and Ananda, then what's the business of going around looking for the discarded refuse of this material world? There's no attraction. So Prabhupada described the material, the taste, is like going to a dung heap. You'll see in Calcutta, they have rubbish heaps. English call it rubbish. We say garbage, they say rubbish. So they have rubbish heaps, dust piles, rubbish. And then in Calcutta, it's blanketed with crows. Crows are the pigeons of Calcutta. And they pick over them. So Prabhupada described mundane literature as a place of pilgrimage for crows, that is to say, a rubbish heap. And those who are swans, they don't have any attraction for those things. So actually, all spiritual reality is already contained in the holy name and Srimad Bhagavatam. It's there, built in. But it's not perceptible by the materially contaminated senses, Atasi, Krishna, Nam, Adi, Habhavet, Grayam, Indriya. Our senses which are engaged in snuffling around this material world like dogs, you know, with their noses in the ground. They can't, those senses, because they're clogged with sense gratification, they cannot perceive Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. But when the senses become purified, then there, by the grace of the Lord, there's a revelation. This is Krishnamurti. So, with that, then there's the hankering for pale material things, petty material things, dolls or shadows of the reality without any permanent value. It simply disappears. What made Srila Prabhupada so attractive to everybody was that he was obviously, even though we could not perceive what he was perceiving, it was obvious that he was onto something, because he had no attraction for these pale things. And he was not frustrated. He was always happy. He was always joyful. And yet he was not engaged in sense gratification, so everybody knew he was on to something that we couldn't see. And then Prabhupada said, yes, I am. It's Krishna, and you can also. So this loss of attraction for material things, for sense enjoyment, he says, is the sign of a spiritually enriched person. So there are signs when somebody suddenly comes into wealth. We do not see them gathering cans on the street corner or even shopping in Kmart. They lose their taste for cheap things. They have access somewhere else. So this is the position of Narada Muni. So to this person, actually, Prabhupada describes himself when he says, this person becomes spiritually enriched like this, and in due course of time, when a pure devotee is completely prepared, this is Krishna's arrangement. When the devotee is ready, he's prepared. All of a sudden, the change of body occurs, which is commonly called death. Now, Prabhupada uses this expression, commonly called death, because in the true sense, the devotee does not experience death. Here it says, tadetsau dhamani yata. Just as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. So for the devotee, actually he does not undergo the process of death. Or, you can look at it this way, he's already done it. In the process of becoming free from all material attachments, he has, in effect, died. That, because if you describe Krishna consciousness to a materialist, you give up attachment to a wife, you give up attachment to your children, you give up attachment to family, you give up attachment to country, you give up attachment to sense enjoyment. He said, well, that's like death. They won't do it. To them, that's precisely what death means. Of course, they have to die. One thing is, of course, we preach to people, please give up everything and surrender to Krishna, but it's built in. We say that surrender to Krishna is the dharma of all living entities, and dharma means you can't change it. It's not an option. You actually have no choice. You have to surrender to Krishna because it's the constitutional position of the living entity. So for the devotee, the surrender to Krishna means to give up our false idea of enjoyment in this material world. We come in the temple, we offer dandabats to Krishna. There he is. In beautiful Radha Krishna form. And Because we become absorbed in the happiness of Krishna consciousness, we shuffle off these other attachments relatively easy. But a materialist will not do this. You're asking too much. As I give up everything and then I have to bow down to Krishna, and you'll never catch me bowing down like that. Sometimes I've seen in the temple, when they see devotees offer obeisances, they have almost a smirk on their face of contempt that someone would bow down like that. But their bowing down takes place at the time of death anyway, because they have to do it. They also have to give up wife, children, family, reputation, everything they're attached to. It in one stroke, it gets taken away. And they offer their dandabats to Krishna in the form of death. That's how they meet him. So the question is not whether or not someone wants to surrender to Krishna. The question is, how do you want to surrender? The nice way, in devotional service in Krishna consciousness, or the horrible way, where you hang on to these things that are unreal, impermanent, and therefore you can't hang on to them, and then everything is revealed to you in 1 minute, your whole life is based on a false premise, everything is taken away, and you have to acknowledge that you're not the enjoyer and you're not the controller. So a pure devotee is prepared, so prepared by his process of becoming absorbed in devotional service and the consequent concomitant renunciation that takes place. He's already got all that over with. He's deliberately weaned himself of these false attachments, so that in effect, that process of death has taken place. So that when the separation from the body, which is commonly called death, occurs, there's no change for the devotee. I mentioned last night that one definition of death, which I read in an astrology book before I became a devotee, I always remembered it because it was so good, that death is the ultimate failure to perpetuate relationships. So, for a devotee who is fully absorbed in Krishna's service, there's no death. Because whatever, all the relationships that devotee has established, they continue. That person's relationship with Krishna continues. That person's relationship with other devotees, that person's relationship with his activities. A person who is fully absorbed in being a physician or a lawyer. At the time of death, his service is terminated. And he takes his next birth for his sins as a patient or a client. But to be maltreated or fleeced. A devotee who's doing simple things, rises early in the morning, dresses the deity, makes Krishna's garland, cooks some food. All those services continue. And if the devotee has fully realized, although those things are being done in connection with the deity, that devotee has realized that Krishna and Krishna's statue are the same. So there's no change. And if the relationships with other devotees are spiritual, those relationships will also continue. There won't be any change. So what is this process of death? It's hardly there at all. It's very fast, like lightning. And the illumination occurs simultaneously. As Prabhupada says here, a devotee simultaneously changes his material body and develops a spiritual body by the will of the Supreme. even before death. A pure devotee has no material affection due to his body being spiritualized like a red-hot iron in contact with fire. So already the body is, for all practical purposes, a spiritual body. The senses that are fully engaged in Krishna service become spiritualized. Prabhupada gives this example here, that if you take a red-hot iron and you put it in fire, it becomes hotter, 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 red-hot, and finally it acts just like fire. Even though it's iron, for all practical purposes, you have to treat it like fire. And it'll ignite and illuminate, all those things, just like fire does. So a devotee's material body, being used in Krishna's senses, becomes spiritualized. That means that for all practical purposes is the same as a spiritual body in Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan. In another metaphor, Prabhupada has compared such a body to a gold-plated box. Not a pure gold box, but gold-plated. Gold-plated means for all practical purposes, it's the same. That means that the material body and the material world will not be any impediment to a devotee's devotional service. That whatever you can achieve with a pure spiritual body in the spiritual world, you can achieve here with a spiritualized body. So that the transition from one to the other is just like a flash of light. And there's no inconvenience. There's no death for the devotee in this time. So this is what happens. People are not busy taking care of the death problem. They're ignoring it and hoping that somehow or other it'll go away or it won't be there. They're compared in their intelligence to animals. Maharaj Yudhisthira said to Yamaraj, this is the most astounding thing, that they see that death is coming to everybody and still they pretend it's not happening. They're like animals lined up for the slaughterhouse who will just be herded in one after another. So this vast 100% universal mortality rate is going on and people are ignoring. Once in a while it comes a little more visible. You can't ignore it so much, like soldiers preparing for battle. Then they think about it when it's visible. But actually, I mean, the death rate is 100%. We're all in the same battle and we're all going to die. We're all going to be casualties. There'll be no survivors. And yet people are pretending this is not happening. This means they're living a life of illusion. They're building their lives on the foundation, on the basis that actually death will not take place, and it will take place. So of course, people are lying to themselves. And of course, one difficulty with lying to yourself is that at heart you know what's going on. Just like, say there's a man who's very, very attached to his wife, and she becomes unfaithful. She's going out with another man. And after a while, she becomes so absorbed in this other man and so contemptuous of her husband that she doesn't even try to hide it very much. So he starts to get, motel, credit cards come in, and she's been in this motel and that motel. Weird phone calls. He picks up the phone, strange man asking for his wife. She leaves around various things, whatever. But the signs are everywhere. In fact, everybody knows but him. He's so enamored with her. He's built his life around her that the idea of her being unfaithful to him would be so devastating that actually he can't handle it. It would just blow the foundation of his life away. He can't. He's a coward. He doesn't want to deal with it. So, but yet the signs are everywhere. All his friends know she's being careless. She doesn't even care. He's getting in. And every symptom he explains away. Every piece of evidence he explains away. So what happens to such a person? In his heart, actually, he knows what's going on. I'll tell you what happens. He gets ulcers. He becomes nervous. He develops psoriasis. His hair starts to fall out. You know, he enters into a state of total anxiety. Even while he's pretending, everything is fine. This is what happens. So the materialists are in the same position with regard to death. So philosophers have called this state the anxiety of existence. It's actually the perpetual undercurrent of terror that nobody can bring to full consciousness. And because of that, they can't enjoy. In fact, the more they enjoy, the more terrified they get. That's a fact, because there's more to lose. There's more to be afraid of. And you know you're going to lose it all at the end. But on the other hand, to actually face nakedly the impermanence of our situation, our insignificance in this whole universe, the meaninglessness of our material lives in the long run of things, is to go crazy. The French philosopher Pascal has some nice meditations on this, you know. He has a series of aphorisms, his thoughts. One of them is the silence of infinite spaces terrifies me. Just thinking of how big the universe is, how insignificant we are, what is the meaning of anything we achieve in this material world, it shouldn't terrify you. But people don't look at the infinite spaces. They don't look at the course of time. They don't look at human history. No, they focus on their bowling trophies. And say, see, I'm important. They got these big golden things stacked up against the wall, you know. They focus on that. In Washington, D.C., big bureaucrats typically have in the office what's called the wall of respect. That you'll go into the wall of these people, and on one wall there'll be pictures of commendation awards, achievement awards, photographs of them shaking hands with the President of the United States with his signature on it. So all the famous people they meet, all their awards, certificates, degrees, it's there. They call it the wall of respect. And the man comes to his office every day and he sits down, stands in front of that wall and, you know. And in this way, he thinks he's not going to die. Huh? It's his religion. And it's a very bad religion. People can conduct these things. So it's a kind of insanity. But Pascal said that human beings are so necessarily mad that not to be mad is another form of madness. That if they, in other words, if they didn't have their illusions and they looked at naked reality in the face, then they go crazy too. Because they couldn't afford it just based on the bodily conception of life. I am this body. And then you look at the material world the way it is. What are you going to do? You'll just lapse into despair. You'll commit suicide. You'll become a junkie. Which is what happens to many people. They go crazy, or they become, because they've actually, their system of illusions is not sufficiently strong. If they're fortunate, they become devotees of Krishna. Because you can see there's no future in the material world. And only devotees can actually afford to look at the material nature as it is, because we have no investment in it. As soon as we have an investment in it, we have to make up fiction about the material world. We have to enter into the system of illusion. We have to try to enjoy this illusion. But those who try to enjoy the illusion of the material world, they have to suffer the illusion of death. Prabhupada said, death is an illusion we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. As soon as we try to enjoy material nature, we acquire the false ego, we identify ourselves with the body, and then everything that happens to the body we think is happening to us. So it's best to back off. There's no future in the material world, not for anybody. The only future is in spiritual reality. People who don't know there's an alternative, then they have a problem. They don't know what to do. You tell them about the nature of the material world, and they say, why are you just bringing all this depressing news, you know? Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, etc. They don't think there's anything to be done. And so they say, yes, it's illusions, but enjoy your illusions while they last. Like that. Because they think there's no reality behind it. They don't know that the spiritual reality is there, soul is there, Krishna is there. So that's what the devotee lives in. When we give up the illusion of sense gratification, then we become competent to live in the spiritual reality while we are in these bodies. It's not like the old communist song, there'll be a pie in the sky when you die. Krishna consciousness can be experienced now. Krishna consciousness is available. We simply have to become fit to actually experience Krishna consciousness, to develop that Krishna consciousness. And that process has been given us to Srila Prabhupada, who describes it as easy. Actually, it is easy. What's hard is making up our minds that we want to take to the process. Once we've acquired the determination to become Krishna conscious, then it is easy. Now, the determination is sometimes a little difficult to get because maybe we don't have enough faith. How do I know if I actually give up all my material attachments there'll be anything else for me to hang on to? Or we're afraid that Krishna will not in every way make us happy, that if I get Krishna consciousness still there'll be something lacking. These kinds of misgivings should be given up. We should commit ourselves with full faith and intelligence to the process of Krishna consciousness. When we do that, very quickly we'll be beginning to make progress in the realization of Krishna's holy name, and we will begin to experience we become spiritually enriched persons, and that symptom will be there of losing our taste for these petty material things. And then automatically, in the course of time, a devotee becomes liberated. A devotee just one day looks behind and says, oh, I'm liberated from the material world, and then is free from death also. So any questions or comments? Yes, please.
When you're describing the disparity that we're realizing materially in the universe and your position within that moment, then most of the people, most of the materialist people that I know at least, they wouldn't consider themselves to be total atheists. And when you start describing things like the contemporaries and whatnot, their position is usually, as long as I'm a good person, as long as I don't do bad things. What do you describe that mentality? What platform are they on?
They're on the karma kanda platform. They think that by obeying certain rules and regulations in the next life, they'll get more permanent sense gratification. This is an illusion that also can overtake devotees, strange as it may seem. I've seen it. That actually what many devotees want is the heavenly planets. That they would actually like to have really pious sense gratification. They don't want to do anything gross, but to have nice, pious sense gratification. So one, the trap there, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, is one becomes, one becomes conditioned by a sense of happiness. You think because you're in the mode of goodness and your sense gratification is relatively elevated, it's not so gross, it's a little more refined, that you don't do sinful things, that then your next life everything will be nice, you'll go to the heavenly planet. They just say heaven, but whenever somebody says heaven, and then they envision heaven as a place of extended sense gratification with Jesus somewhere hovering in the background. That's really, they're aiming at the heavenly planet. I remember we used to get this Christian cartoon book showing somebody, showing the Day of Judgment. So God is represented as a, and so some people, he said, were going past God to heaven, while others are being cast into the lake of everlasting fire, in which the writer of the cartoon book was more interested. But it was interesting that here they were in front of God, but they were going past God to heaven. So that betrayed the mentality that what they want is not God, but they want the gratifications that they think that God can provide them. So that, of course, Christians also, some Christians have a higher idea that heaven is what they call the beatific vision, that is to say the direct perception of God. Although usually that's depicted in, as a very neutral shanta rasa at best. The actual idea of any sport going on, baseball or whatever, with catch or anything like that, they can't imagine. So there's higher conception also. So what people want with their restricted pious sense gratification, they think it's more permanent. Just like it's sometimes easier for people to give up very gross sense gratification, because right afterwards they suffer pain. So if you find somebody who's attached, to drugs, they have some intense experience and then they suffer afterwards, and they enter into a state of despair, and because they suffer so much, and then they want to give it up, and everything else falls apart. But you get somebody who's, say, an accomplished musician, and his thing that he's really attached to is playing Bach sonatas on the violin. You're very hard for him to give that up. Even when he's old, he can appreciate that, because it's on a higher level. It's not so intense. So that's the difficulty of the mode of goodness. People become attached. The only good thing about it is that person may be intelligent enough also to hear Krishna consciousness, and will go to it out of... But otherwise they think, I'm fine, I'm all right, everything is wonderful, I don't break any rules, I'm very pious, my future looks bright, not suffering. That's what happens to them. But they, of course, have to realize also that these things, mental enjoyment or mental objects, artifacts like aesthetic objects, they last longer. The mental plane is more subtle and therefore more permanent than the gross plane. So that's why people get on that platform, and sometimes they even identify the spiritual with the mental. But it's not. So they think that actually high culture, art, music, literature, poetry, they think that's spiritual. But it's also, at the time after the time of death comes, and also it goes. Anything else? All right.
What? I just didn't hear the final conclusion. You heard the example about the man who was very tested.
Oh, the purport was in the same way the same way people are kidding themselves about the material world. Death is there. They actually see the symptoms. People are dying right and left like flies. They read the obituary pages. They know everybody's going to die. Yet they can't face what it's like. And so they live in an illusory world. Oh, this is a nice place. You know, everything is okay. They preserve their illusions. But inside, you know, they're in terror. And philosophers call this the anxiety of existence. It means the perpetual fear of death that underlines everything. So people are not at ease. And actually, the more they enjoy, the more nervous, the more in anxiety they are in, because they have more to lose. That's one reason why there's no happiness in the material world, even when people are enjoying. And you'll notice that when people get into enjoying, their enjoyment has a kind of desperate, driven quality to it. And that drivenness is they're out to prove something. They're not at ease. They're not relaxed. The only people who are really carefree are children and pure devotees. Children because they're still, they don't realize, and pure devotees because they're... That was the thing about Prabhupada, is that he was so carefree. He was like a child. Well, where did that childlike quality come from? Because he had no fears, he had no anxieties. And for a brief period, children are like that. Then they cut their finger and they start to realize. You notice how little children have a religion of band-aids? I remember when one of my children was very, very young, he told me he wanted a body of plastic. That's because he had these toys. I forgot who makes them. Tonka toys? They're these plastic trucks and things. You can't break them. I forgot the manufacturer. They make all kinds of cranes and trucks and construction equipment, cranes, and they're just unbreakable plastic. So one day after he hurt himself, he told me he wanted a body of plastic. Unbreakable. He was like so upset that this is, you know, one little cut and you can see the whole future. Anything else that you had?
Yes, Prabhu. I was in ranked university in New York. I was talking with a professor of psychology, and he tried to convince me that the Krishna consciousness, the success, Prabhupada successful, was due to because Prabhupada came to America in a special time. Middle of 60, when there was in America a social revolution, that the people was looking for God through the artificial ways like idea of spiritual freedom. And he tried to show me that the Hare Krishna, to be Hare Krishna was the fashion of 60s and 70s. And he said that the Prabhupada took her child in early 80s or late or early 90s, you know, he never could get a successful or Krishna consciousness, never get a successful that Prabhupada made in this time. What kind of argument we can give to this person to prove that this is a speculation?
Well, there's partial truth to it, but the whole thing is wrong. First of all, it's still being successful. We're still getting people. Because the need of Krishna consciousness, the Krishna consciousness fills a natural need of a human being. But for something as radical and as new in America, I think the 60s were very appropriate. In my judgment, it was Krishna's arrangement that the 60s were there. I mean, the professor will not believe that it was Krishna's arrangement. But I believe it was. I don't know about the 70s or 80s, but I can imagine that if Prabhupada came to America in 1954, I remember 1954. I mean, that because people did come. I mean, there were Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati disciples in Europe in the 30s. They couldn't do anything. And so Prabhupada came at the right time, and it was providential. It was Krishna's arrangement. And what did that arrangement do? That there was a whole group of young people who saw no future for themselves in American society, and therefore they were open to hear something new. That their bodily designations, which they had inherited, did not seem to them to be adequate to their needs, and so they were open. I think that they continue to be open. Partially because the 60s was not something that happened and that ended, but it was absorbed by the rest of society. And now, we have seen in the last 20 years or so, 25 years, that the whole of modern Western society has moved in a huge direction toward the values of Krishna consciousness. When I first became a vegetarian, my mother thought I was going to die. People thought you were crazy. Now you say I'm a vegetarian, people inevitably say, oh, I'd like to try that too, or I'd like to be a vegetarian too, or I'm trying to give up meat, or I'm trying to eat less wheat. My mother says, oh, you're so healthy, your diet is so healthy. I mean, what a change. And you can find so many exotic words, avatar, mantra, yoga, guru. They're all in the English dictionary. They're English.
Pundit.
Pundit was there before from the British, huh? But avatar, you know, you read in a newspaper the avatar of arbitrage or something. You know, it's they become. What about our other values? Animal rights. Look at animal rights. Who would have thought something like animal rights would have become a big issue? And now, even our strict sexual restrictions also are becoming more and more plausible to people. In fact, I remember in when I became a new devotee, giving class in Prabhupada Srimad Bhagavatam, when he talked about shortages in the world, that there will be shortages because of mismanagement. And this was in 1971, 1972. There was no shortages. We had everything. Gasoline was 32 cents a gallon. And then in 1974, all of a sudden, there was the first gasoline crisis. And all of a sudden, what Prabhupada said in Bhagavatam started to make sense to everybody. So it's things are working in our direction. So that that I think after 1960, if Prabhupada had come any time later, I mean, these are, you know, what they call in philosophy, contrafactual conditionals, speculation. But I don't see that you would have met with no receptivity. And we continue to meet with receptive people. So there was, at that time, when Prabhupada came, a large pool of available people. And now, as the discontents of Western civilization continue, there'll still be a large pool of available people. On and on and on. That will continue going on. And now, because we're preaching, and our preaching is percolating through society, I think our preaching is changing society in very, very many ways. Some very subtle, some are gross. We don't know the effect we're having. But once in a while you can see, there was a woman who joined our Philadelphia temple in 1973. She wanted to be a devotee desperately. Her husband didn't. She came to the temple with her two children. For 1 year she tried to be a devotee with her two children, and she was like a little eccentric about the whole thing because she really had a hard time without her husband. So finally, after a year or so, she left, went back to her husband. Everybody said she moved. Right? So I saw her name about 1986, again for the first time. She just disappeared from view. And the one I was in the store, I saw a poster, Philadelphia Vegetarian Society, and there was her name, the president. You know. Now, she had never been an initiated devotee. And then I happened to run across, a month later, I ran into her. She says, I've been chanting. I'm up to 16 rounds now. My husband's a vegetarian now. You know, this, that. I try to preach Krishna consciousness. She had never really left Krishna consciousness. And she'd been working on her husband. And she'd put together and organized and developed the whole Philadelphia Vegetarian Society. There are a lot of people out there who got their inspiration or their direction or their impetus from the Krishna consciousness movement and then went out and did something like that. Yeah.
A lot of those people don't know they got it from the Krishna.
They don't even know where it came from. That's right.
And that they're fanatically animal rights or, you know, anti this or that. It's because of so much talk that went around.
So much talk, our books go around, people read them. Who knows what they absorb? They hear the mantra, the idea, even just the idea, the notion. Some people may just hear the notion that animals, the same as human beings, they have the same soul. And, you know, just that idea may just, wow, I never thought of it that way. It makes sense. And so, yes?
Satyaraj told recently that the author of Jonathan Livingston Siegel paid Prabhupada $5,000 in royalties for that book.
Yeah, that was a very popular book. I never read it. But about reincarnation. There's another idea that's become more and more and more common and acceptable.
The movie Ghost was like it was crazy.
Yeah. Ghost Purana. The first motion picture Purana. Everybody's seeing it.
I think it was last week there was in America there was a show called 2020 in the evening. It's like a semi TV show. And two subjects they had, one of them was about, it's actually called Is This Any Kind of Life or something like that. And it was about people in Southern California who were traveling 70 or 100 miles.
Sure, so we're not so weird anymore. So what I'm saying is the whole society has gone a long distance toward Krishna consciousness. Plus, people are now 25 years old. They've seen us since their childhood. You talk to people now, when did you first meet devotees? Oh, I was a little kid, my father took me to the temple. Well, we get people all the time. The first time they came to the temple is when their parents took them. So. Anything else? Yeah?
So we just had a discussion in the food meditation class about the protein that you can get from legumes and vegetarian products and meat products. And it fits in more, which is better for the body to be assimilated with. And so he just admitted that he didn't know. And then the next week he clicked out this whole article from Newsweek. And in the article, they were saying that years ago, meat used to be the main part of the meal, and vegetables are just on the side. And now they say that the vegetables and beans should be the main meal, and meat should be completely cut out. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they want meat completely removed from the food.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a fact.
Yes.
Oh, well, the holy name, when the holy name begins to reveal itself, first there's a revelation of Krishna's name, then his form, then his qualities, then his pastimes. That's the sequence. Yes?
When you're in the office where I work, it's a program where you have a child, a small child, a baby, up until 5 years old, they give them free grain and milk, like that. And she would have to go once a month, and she has to, they give the Department of Health, whatever, they make them see a movie before they give them the ticket. And the doctors and the counselors tell them that their children, now they tell them their children don't eat any movie.
Is that right?
In New York City, their children should be vegetarian. There should be plenty of beans and rice,
fruit
and vegetables, and absolutely no
meat. Rice. Nobody ate rice in their food.
Really?
It's a staple food. It's a staple food, rice.
I think we better stop now and run over time. Our glories to Srila Prabhupada.